Item number 5, from the Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting a report providing an update on the study group activities regarding the possible transfer of management of inmate mental health and health care services to DHHS and requesting an extension of the implementation date to October 1, 2012. This item is also before the Committee on Health and Human Needs.
Okay, thank you. Before us, why don't you both introduce yourselves?
Mr. Chair, my name is Hector Colon. I'm the Director of the Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Bob Paolozzi, the Administrator of the Behavioral Health Division.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'll give you a brief overview, really, of our last meeting and some of the recent developments. At our last meeting, we agreed as a group that more time was needed to flesh out some details, and we determined that that date would be October 1st. And some of the things that we agreed to that needed to happen, Dr. Shansky was also involved at the meeting and in agreement with these things. But we talked about the need to recruit and subsequently appoint the health center administrator position. That was really key to just, a key position that needed to be filled, in addition to a chief psychiatrist and also the medical director position. We drafted an MOU, and we started to have some discussion on that, and we agreed that we needed to have some additional dialogue and some additional input before a final draft was completed and signed by all of the parties. And we also had some initial meetings with the sheriff and DAS to go over some fiscal administrative functions. And at that meeting, we discussed that there could be a potential cross charge of 1.2 to 1.7 million. And at that part of those cross charges included a psychology model that Dr. Shansky wanted us to implement if we were going to take over the inmate medical. So the psychology added some additional costs. At that meeting, Dr. Shansky indicated that there could be some elimination of staff to accommodate the new psychology model. So we all agreed that more discussion was needed to make sure we have a model that was going to be agreed upon all parties, and those costs could possibly reduce as a result of those discussions. We also talked about the need to evaluate the formulary at the inmate medical. Currently, they administer some of the older drugs such as Haldol and Thorazine. It is the interest of the Department of Health and Human Services and BHD that if we were to take this over, we'd like to have some of the newer, more effective drugs that have less side effects. And at first, it was thought that this could be an additional significant cost, but Ms. Lucy later told us that it probably wasn't going to be that significant, maybe nothing at all, because some of the drugs were now in generic form. But we had to figure that out and have a discussion on that because it could have resulted in some additional costs. The last thing was the electronic medical records. Dr. Shansky indicated that, and actually the sheriff's office as well, that the medical records was inadequate and there was a need to have a new system in place. Dr. Shansky provided us with a memo indicating that he would like to have that done within 9 months. Electronic medical records is pretty expensive, in the millions of dollars, and so that was a discussion we needed to have with the sheriff before a full transition were to take place. Within hours of our last meeting, the sheriff went to the courts and made a motion to do two things. One, to lift the Christensen consent decree, and then two, to allow him to have Armor take over inmate medical. Our Corporation Council has, as a result of that, Corporation Council has advised us that we should no longer meet in these work group meetings until this issue is handled in court. The sheriff believes he has the constitutional authority to make this decision, and he may have, but again, that has to get handled in court. And a determination, I believe, will be forthcoming in the near future on that. Honestly, as this gets resolved in court, and let's say that the court decides that he does not have the ability to make this unilateral decision, Department of Health and Human Services, I'll just be honest, feels a little uncomfortable pursuing a continued relationship as a result of the lack of honesty and lack of transparency throughout this process. We spent a lot of time. There's been a lot of meetings. And I will say, obviously, we'll adhere to the will of the board. But I just want to get my thoughts on record here in terms of us not feeling too comfortable moving forward with this relationship.
Do we have a court date yet?
Mr. Chairman, there is no court date yet. And I would also say that this is on the list of litigation, excuse me, that I intended to discuss with you in closed session. But in answer to your question, there is no current court date yet.
So then, is it status quo as far as how the inmates are being treated then, as far as, because I know that July 1 was kind of a deadline date?
That is correct. Inmate medical has been provided by the sheriff's department. It will continue to be provided by them until a decision is made.
Ms. Lucy, anything that you'd like to add?
Supervisor, I think Mr. Colon has accurately and consistently summarized the activities. I would say that we really did work forward in good faith. We did a lot of research, and all of our research, which we reported on last month, indicated in places where this has been successful, San Francisco, Dallas, Seattle, even Chicago, the discussion has all, the number one thing that people told us when we called there and said, how does it work to have an elected sheriff and have someone else providing the medical services, the number one comment was, you must have a very strong collaborative and partnership, otherwise it doesn't work. So with this, as to echo Mr. Colon's comments, it makes us very uncomfortable to pursue this in lack with difficulty thinking about how that could occur.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lucy. Committee members, any comments, questions? Supervisor Johnson.
I have a comment because I've been on the Finance and Audit Committee. I've been on the Finance and Audit Committee for 8 years, and I thought during the budget hearings that this is something that would be very fruitful. It appears that there was consensus to go in this direction to have this done. And I'm very disappointed if it does result that this outcome or this would be outcome isn't attained because somebody somewhere wanted to do something that wasn't consistent in having a positive collaborative relationship with another entity. So I'll be very disappointed if this does not work out. This is June, and we will have the county executive come before us in September to give us his proposed budget. And again, I was very, very optimistic that this collaboration between the Office of the Sheriff and the Department of Health and Human Services would be something that we would have arrived at by this time. So I will be very disappointed. And as one of the co-chairs of the Finance, Personnel, and Audit Committee, I'll take a look at what's going to happen in September, November. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Weishan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have somebody just, I guess, clarify a little bit for me? If the consent decree is lifted, how does that affect how we deliver health care in the jail? We still have to provide health care in the jail, and I thought having our Health and Human Services Department provide those services was the most cost-effective kind of continuation of treatment to produce a lower cost for Milwaukee County. So I guess, could somebody explain to me why we wouldn't still proceed with this process regardless of whatever court decision happens? Or
Well, I heard a legal question there, but I'm not sure if Attorney Grady wants to weigh in, or either Mr. Clone or Ms. Lucy.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I can partially answer that question now, and I think maybe more details later. But what has happened from a legal standpoint is that the sheriff, as Mr. Clone said, through Attorney Whitcomb, filed a motion in circuit court to ask that a portion of the, referred to as a consent decree, be lifted, and that is the portion related to inmate medical care, on the grounds that the county has been in compliance with it and there's no longer a necessity for it in general terms. In addition, he is arguing that he, the sheriff, has the constitutional authority and right to make the decision on what inmate medical care can be, regardless of what the county board's adopted policy says and regardless of what the consent decree provides. And so he is asking that the court recognize his constitutional authority to retain a private company, Armor, to perform those services. So if he is right, something yet to be determined, but if he is right, then the county board's adopted budget will not matter. The court will say, if he is right, that he has the authority to hire Armor Medical. If he is wrong, obviously, then you have an adopted policy that provides for this transition. Then the question is, can it be made to work given the sheriff's reluctance? And so those are the questions. I think they're legal questions intertwined with policy questions. And so
I guess, that clarifies a lot, because I think what's happened here then is that the sheriff, after months of meetings and negotiations on how to implement health care in the house correction in the jail, decided unilaterally that he wants to privatize that system, and basically has wasted the last
year.
3 to 6 months, on those. I just wanted so that's what, how this going to court thing. He's instead of following through with our budget policy, he's decided to go a different route, and the way he accomplishes that is by going to court.
I don't know if Mr. Clone or Ms. Lucy has anything else to add to Supervisor Weishan's other issues that are non-legal.
I guess I would only say that I think that we are interested in moving forward, particularly interested in thinking about the care of clients who are mentally ill. However, a positive working relationship needs to be in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Supervisor Broderick.
Yeah, just briefly, I'm wondering regardless of the court action or on this matter, regardless how the court rules on that aspect, my assumption would be that the circumstances would still be under the review of the monitor. Dismissing a portion, you said.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Again, I'm just going to repeat what I understand the sheriff to be asking the court to do. And what I understand the sheriff to be asking the court to do is to lift the consent decree with respect to inmate medical, which means there is no more monitor.
Okay, so
monitor is part of the consent decree.
The practical impact is lifting the decree in its entirety.
On those portions of the...
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
We do have some members of the audience that would like to make comments. Barbara Beckert. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Borkowski and members of the committee. I'm Barbara Beckert. I'm the director of the Milwaukee Office of Disability Rights, Wisconsin, and as a protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities in our community, we're often on the front line with the concerns that you've been hearing about, with the failure to provide inmates with disabilities, particularly with mental illness, with access to the health care and the mental health care that they need and that they're legally entitled to. So I wanted to share a few comments with you this morning. First of all, I want to thank the county board, because I know that you share the concerns and that you have tried to take action to address them, and that was something that was a priority in the last budget. And also to thank Directors Colon and Lucy, because I think that they worked very hard to try and make this successful. They were in touch with advocacy groups like ours in the community to learn about what we were seeing, as well as having many meetings with the sheriff and his team, as you heard about. And we were all shocked when, on a day when they actually had met with the sheriff's team to get an update and to plan on this transition, when later that very same day a motion was filed in court to move in a completely different direction. So as far as that different direction is concerned, one of the ideas that's being proposed is that the consent decree should be lifted because there's not a need for it anymore because the conditions have been met. And, you know, I think that that is very far from the case, and I wanted to reinforce that to you as policymakers. First of all, there's a whole array of key positions that are not currently filled, the medical director, the psychiatrist, the medical administrator, and there's a wide array of other conditions. The consent decree actually has very specific requirements for the health services program. I'm holding it here. It's 8 pages long. And there's just no doubt that many of those conditions have not been met. So I'm not a judge, but I don't see how we could expect that to happen to move forward with lifting.
And I have to caution, I'm getting the high sign from the attorneys as far as how far you can say it.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned that the agenda item is not the Christensen case. The agenda item is the transition to DHHS.
Okay.
And I don't think, number one, it's fruitful for you to discuss in open session the Christensen case and hear from, for example, Mr. Knesney, who's on the other side of the V in the case, because that's not what this agenda item is. This agenda item is the transition. You've heard about the report of the transition. We know that the case is impacting that transition, but to discuss the case itself and the merits of the monitor, I think, is beyond the agenda item.
Ms. Beckert, I don't know if you could massage some words then.
Well, thank you. I certainly want to be respectful of the concerns that staff are raising. I guess, you know, what I'm saying to you is that we do want to be a resource for you as policymakers, and we hope that you can find a way to continue to take some leadership with all the moving parts. You know, it's I guess some questions have been raised about what the authority and role of the county board is, but we're really beseeching you to find a way to continue to make a difference, because the concerns that we continue to see on the front line are extremely serious, and these also have a fiscal impact. It's not only the impact on people's lives, but there's also a fiscal impact. You know, for example, some of the experiences that public defenders have shared is that when individuals with a mental illness have been sent to Winnebago or Mendota mental health institutes to have competency restored, and then they come back to the system here with the idea that they're going to be able to proceed with trial, they are not getting access to the medication that they need. And so they deteriorate, and sometimes they have to go back again to Mendota and Winnebago. So I just want to make the point to you that there isn't just a human cost to this. There's also a fiscal cost. And I know you want to be good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, and we would like to be a resource for you, as would other advocacy groups, to let you know about the serious problems that are still occurring with those of us who are on the front line. So thank you for your continuing efforts to address these, and please let us know how we can be a partner with you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Ms. Brenda Wesley, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about human cost. I won't get into the fiscal side, but I just want to tell you about a story. My life's work is to talk on behalf of my son and family members that deal with a mental health disorder. I have a son that has a severe and chronic mental health disorder, as well as he is in the system itself. He has gone into the county jail and the House of Correction last year, I would say 4 times, rotated 4 times to serve a sanction. When he went into the facility, medication did not follow. He was not put on his medication for a couple of weeks. There was one instance that he went into the system, and the medication was changed. I can tell you every time that I pick my son up from serving a sanction at the county jail or the House of Correction, he came out worse than he did when he came in. There was one particular instance where he did not receive his medication, became very symptomatic, and spent 28 days in the hole. He did eventually get his medication, but it was lobbying on behalf of myself as being an advocate and calling the right individuals, calling back and forth to the institution. He does have a community support program that he was in, but for some reason, the prescription was lost in a black hole. For some reason, the prescription was not transferred from the county jail downtown to Franklin. For some reason, there was not a doctor available to see him. He also had medical issues as well, but for some reason, no one seemed to understand, or no one did not know what the right hand and the left hand was doing. So when we talk about the cost, and we're talking about lives, and we're talking about, unfortunately, because of the treatment and the lack thereof of getting medication and my son coming out worse when he came out than when he went in, his drug addiction and alcohol addiction went through the roof. His mental health disorder, he became very symptomatic. Right now, my son is waiting to be transferred out to the Wisconsin Resource Center. So he is incarcerated today, not getting services until he is transferred there. So when we have people sit before you and they're reading off of a chart as far as dollars and cents, I'm reading and talking about the community, and we're talking about real lives here. And I truly believe, because the system has failed him on every level, that him going out to the Wisconsin Resource Center, because he is on probation and parole to serve the rest of his time there, but I blame the system because there was lack of care and a lack of concern about a particular individual. And I advocate for my son, and if I can't get the system to change and the advocacy work that I do, what about all of the other people without voices? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Wesley. Thank you for sharing, and our best wishes to you and your family. Mr. Racy?
No, that's okay.
Okay. And then Mr. Knuzny? I guess I had it. Did I screw that up again?
Knuzny.
Knuzny. We obviously learned that you're on the other side, but I'm curious about the suicide numbers. So that was the issue that I had. But
sure,
please.
And I realize that, you know, there should be circumspection here as far as anything you would say to me, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. The one comment I wanted to make as far as the transition is, we had supported, we being the advocates for the plaintiffs in the Christensen case, supported having the county and BHD take over the system because it seemed like it would be, I mean, some change needed to happen, and that seemed to be not only a good organization that was, I mean, they were working on their own electronic monitoring improvements and other things, so it seemed like why not fix both systems together? The main reason being, it's a lot of the same people. The jail population is very fluid. It's not like a prison where you have people there a set amount of time. You have people flowing through your community support programs, the BHD, and Watertown Plank, and back through the jail. And some people cycle through a lot. So medication changes and other things that happen when the jail treats itself as if it's a fortress on another planet, which sometimes seem like it could be the case, where you really need that communication, that a joint system seemed to make a lot of sense for those kinds of reasons. So I just wanted to mention that was the privatization issue is not our issue in the Christensen case. It's bottom line. I think the same thing. The monitor doesn't care who provides it, although there are definite concerns. And I think Dr. Shansky had expressed strong concerns about the particular company, Armor, being involved because of the proposal they had submitted he thought was legally dangerous in terms of LPNs doing work beyond their license. So he was very negative about that, how that was submitted. And the experience with privatized systems is very checkered across the country. So it's not an ideal situation to have a for-profit entity. Main issue comes back to item number three, cooperation with the sheriff, which would have to happen with BHD or with any other medical people trying to provide services. So our concern isn't who does it, and in fact, privatization could happen within a decree. It allows the sheriff to make changes in that way, provided the outcomes are good. So we don't really have an issue with that. The suicide issue, that's just a list of things taken from records that were provided through an open records request. Suicides happen in jails. You can't always stop them.
The numbers again and the timeline, I'm sorry.
Well, there was, I can give you the list as it was compiled by a reporter.
I don't mean to belabor it.
That provided it to me. It's through 2000, September of 2000 through July of 2011. These are deaths, not all suicides. Several suicides, one in 07, one in, and then the ones I mentioned that was right at the time where they were, when the medical director had left and there was this transition. But I can provide you with this list.
Okay, I don't mean to belabor the point. I heard, well, anything is outrageous, but I... Ten in that short
period
of time.
It's a little dramatic. It's a dramatic thing to put, but I want, you know, I hope to get your attention with that. This is serious business. And anybody in your jail could be a suicide or be involved in other violence there. So in terms of medical support as well as keeping people out that don't need to be there are all mixed together.
Great. Comments? Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of item number 5 of resolution.
Well, actually, Supervisor, if I could interrupt you and maybe ask you to withdraw it, and I'll tell you why. Because this item is also on the Health and Human Service, Health and Human Needs Committee. And if I understand the motion correctly...
I'll withdraw it.
Thank you. Okay. The correct motion, I guess... And I'm waiting into so if it's wrong, it's my fault, but I'm going to ask the Vice Chair, Supervisor Harris.
And I'll need it.
Well, okay, because you have to make a motion here.
You've got it.
I'm sorry. Okay, Supervisor Harris.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have comments, but I'm just going to reserve them because I'll be honest. What I have to say will probably go on the paper and be work against me other than work for me in my favor. But anyway, I'm just going to ask to have this item move layover to the call of the chair.
Okay, thank you. And if I could look to our research analyst, why that motion is appropriate, I guess I'm just following orders.
Sure, Mr. Chairman and supervisors, any action that the committee wants to take is in the policymaker's purview, but one of the things discussed was with everything going on and with sort of the summary you're going to hear later in the meeting, it might be a good idea to lay this item over to the call of the chair, see what shakes out with things, and then you can always reschedule it at a later time.
Plus the fact that it's also being heard by Health and Human Needs, right? Okay. Thank you. Okay. The motion has been heard. Madam Clerk, please.
Supervisors Harris.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Weishon.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Sanfilippo.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, before I'm going to look to the committee, we will probably need to go into closed session on some of these. There's a reason that there's going to be a withdrawal that's going to take place, but I wanted to know if we could take any of the next items in open session before the vice chair goes for the motion for closed session. Yes, Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask Mr. Deputy Corporation Counsel Grady to give us a summary as to what he thinks we can do in open session. Okay. Looking at item number six, I believe that that could be done in open session, but I would ask, I would defer to Deputy Corporation Counsel, Margaret.
Okay, Attorney Grady.
Mr. Chairman, just a preview for you, we're going to ask that item number six be withdrawn to, and I think the chairman will ask unanimous consent to that item being withdrawn. Essentially, the settlement is falling apart. Item seven is your pleasure. If there's discussion you want to have on it, we can have it in closed session. If you're ready to act on it without discussion, you can do it in open session. Item eight, I believe we can do an open session. Item nine, I believe, should be temporarily laid over until after you take up item 12 on the addendum. Item 10 could be done in open session, I believe, and then 11 would be closed, and 12 would be closed.
Okay.
Maybe with open session action, but initially closed.
So I guess if I heard you correctly, there's a couple items for sure to go into closed session, but
yes.
Outside of those, we could take the rest up now if the committee is comfortable. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to look to Supervisor Harris on item number six. Supervisor, if you could make that motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to withdraw item number six.
And ask for unanimous consent on that. We need to take a roll on that, right?
I believe the ordinance says it requires a majority of the board, but if you have unanimous consent, that's a majority.
Very good. Okay, thank you. So there's no objection. Okay. So...